I went into this NFL draft, listeners, with a happy emoji above my head, thinking the Giants have a boatload of picks, and they're going to hit a home run in this draft. I just had that feeling in my heart, of all hearts. But then, once the draft was completed, the emoji that I had above my head was a sign that said it's time to fire Dave Gettleman. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants or Jets, Yankees or Mets, Knicks or Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
Hey, yo, B! And please, part my fresh, as we bring you an all-new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, April 29th, 2019, and this show airs every single Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast, yes, we are all over the place, listeners, like I always mention. So please be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And listeners, we're also on social media, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram, LLOYD. Be sure to hit that follow button so you can keep up on what's going on. Listeners, great show for you today. We're going to have our recap of the NFL draft. We're going to talk about the Giants selections, the Jets selections, and we're going to give overall grades for the AFC East, which is with the division that the Jets are in, and the NFC East, the division that the Giants are in. And we're going to talk some playoff hockey as the Islanders are down 2-0, and they're in serious trouble going into a must-win game 3. So as always, listeners, let's buckle up. Sit back and relax and start spreading the news. Hey, yo, let's get it.
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, man, Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lord, I'm just getting back from Nashville, and I just want to get right into it because we got a lot to unpack.
Listen, can I just say I love the fact that every time the commissioner stepped up on stage, he got booed? I just want to point that out there. But like you said, well, listen, this is our ultimate views on a Jets draft. Both of our mock drafts were completely destroyed. All right? But let's just focus on the Jets draft class in 2019 before we move on to the Giants, Mad Mike. And this would be shaped up over years to come and be much more relevant, you know, than our initial impressions, in my opinion. But we have to start somewhere, right? So I just want to give my initial thoughts on the Jets draft class, and I want to start with my likes about it, all right? Now, here we are, listeners. I think that if you aren't excited about this team adding Quinnen Williams, the odds of that, you haven't watched this young man play, all right? This Quinnen Williams has dominated at the highest level of college football, and I'm sure some people have gone in depth, you know, with his film and have legitimate concerns. But these folks are in a minority, Mad Mike. You hear me? Now, it seems like the Jets used a strategy of complementary drafting, in my opinion, with their first two picks. But if you were conflicted between Williams and Josh Allen, knowing that you likely have Jahil Polite sitting there at 68, serving something as a tiebreaker, you are taking a calculated gamble, in my opinion, that can get both the edge guy you need and still benefit from Quinnen Williams, what he brings to the table. So it's tough to say how most of these guys will turn out. But one expectation the Jets made big swings with, you know, their picks. When you're low on quantity of picks, which the Jets seem to always be, you have to roll the dice on upsides. And am I saying his name right? Jashai P- Polite?
Ja'Kai Polite.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks for the correction, Mad Mike. Ja'Kai Polite is 68. In my opinion, it sucks as an example. Look, Mike McCagnon has drafted 4 edge rushers in his tenure with the Jets. But the other 3 were limited players with low ceilings. And this is the first time he's picked a guy who has a legitimate chance to be a consistent double-digit sack guy, Mad Mike. I just want to get you... Again, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, this is actually, if we want to be fair to him, this is the first time he's drafted a legitimate pass rush, you know, edge rusher. This is the first time. The other ones were safe character picks, banking on some higher, you know, some taking a little more projection. I don't want to say higher upside. He was projecting more than anything else. Ja'Kai Polite was actually one of the guys that I was banging the table for. I was hoping the Jets would, you know, everybody was screaming for a center. And I just kept saying, we got to get this guy. We got to get this guy. And the reason why is when you read and you listen to all the folks that say that he had character concerns, what character concerns did he have? Did he have off-the-field concerns? And what I'm getting at is, was it Kareem Hunt who had an incident in college and then you draft him in the second or third round and you hope that he figured it out and this doesn't happen again? Or Tariq Hill who had issues, domestic violence issues prior to the draft and now, you know, the issues he has now? No, he had on-field concerns. So you know, he was one of the worst testing. It was historically one of the worst combine in history, they said. It's just what it is. On tape, he's a first-round draft pick. If he would have had a good combine, he would have been a first-round draft pick. That's just facts. So if you're the Jets and you think you have the coaching staff in place, and this draft all across the board, Lloyd, was an indictment of Todd Bowles. It really was, which I'll touch on in a little later when we give our grades for them. But if you feel like you have the coaching staff that can now handle a guy who might have, I guess, on-field concerns, motivation, motor, whatever you want to call it, they have the answers to that in the clubhouse, right? We touched on C.J. Mosley being a leader. One of the reasons that they wanted him so badly and moved on from Darren Lee was not talent. It was the fact that Darren Lee is still an immature he's just an immature guy who doesn't lead in the clubhouse, getting popped for drug testing, et cetera. You know, C.J. Mosley's going to erase that. We already know for a fact Quinnen Williams, he comes from Nick Saban, where that's not tolerated in Alabama. So, you know, you got a leader there. We think we have a leader in Leo. Who knows? And it doesn't even matter, right? Greg Williams, Greg Williams takes no crap from anybody. So I thought it was the perfect pick. And you know, we praise the Knicks for getting multiple first-round players in this draft. Didn't say first-round picks, first-round players. And that's what the Jets did here. They got multiple first-round players. Adam Quinnen Williams, Ja'Kai Polite, and Edoga. Everyone says he's another one. If you take out the character concerns, you got a first-round talent here. Got a mauler. You got a guy who could play tackle and guard.
I think when you go through this process, sometimes you stumble upon guys you really like but have no use for your team. I originally thought Blake Cashman was one of those guys for the Jets given the team's current roster construction, but it would make no sense to pick a linebacker before day 3 of the draft. You know, I thought Cashman would be a long gone before, in my opinion, Matt Mike, but when he fell into the 5th round, suddenly things opened up. At that point, you're simply looking for a player. You know, position becomes less important. I can't tell you that Cashman will become a starting material or be a starter in NFL, but I think he has a decent shot. And in the meantime, you know, I think he'll be a good special teams player. And what I want in the 5th round is somebody who can help immediately as a special teamer with a starter upside. And I think that young man has those qualities, Matt Mike. What's your thoughts on him?
Special teams ace. That's the first thing I thought when they drafted him. And two, this is going to come off real. I don't want this to come off wrong. If you're a football fan, you know what I'm talking about here. You get white guys, linebackers, that come off 100 tackle season, and they come out of Minnesota and they come out of Wisconsin. You know that they're tough as nails football players. Yeah, you understand what I'm saying? And I know that people are like, well, there was other guys, David Jones, West Virginia was still there. they should have probably went that route. Yeah, I get it. But this kid is going to be an ace on the special teams. He's going to be unbelievable. You don't have 104 tackles in an NCAA season in 14 games, 12, 13 games, whatever it is, if you're not willing to put your helmet in there. And I thought that this is, a lot of people thought they were going to trade Darren Lee for a draft pick, me being one of them. But once you got past the third round, I knew that there was no way he was going to be a day three pick. So one thing that Maccagnan has excelled at as GM of the Jets, something that goes unnoticed for some strange reason, is he's done a lot he's made a lot of player for player trades that have really worked out in the Jets' favor, like unbelievably in the Jets' favor. And drafting a guy like this in the fifth round, he now allows you to actually trade Darren Lee, because he's going to play the same exact role Darren Lee's going to play here as a backup middle linebacker, who could play on third down in coverage and spot duty. He's going to take that now, and now you can free up, if you can free up Darren Lee's salary, and this guy as a fifth rounder is going to make, what, a few $100,000? Now all of a sudden that money can go elsewhere, you know, maybe to a center, maybe to Ziggy Ansah, maybe, you know, who knows which way. You know, I'm sure Janoris Jenkins might be getting cut after this draft. Maybe you sign him.
Now, here's the thing. Here's my dislike, Mad Mike. And it's going to be curious to see what you have to say. I don't necessarily think you're going to agree with me, but maybe you will. And this is a big one for me. And for the third time in his five drafts, and Mike Maccagnan is left with less picks than he started with. And it's really tough to be an effective drafter, in my opinion, operating like this. Yes, I know, you know, the Sam Darnold trade was necessary. Yes, I know the offers at three might have been to his liking. You know, this is just something that started yesterday, however. This is, you know, a long-term trend with Mike Maccagnan, and the smart teams in the NFL incorporate adding draft capital until they, you know, holistic roster, bolden strategy year-round. So, you know, the NFL draft is always a game of odds, and you do your best to take educated guesses on players at times, but it's impossible to state, you know, to say with certainty how many of these guys will pan out. Some, you know, some it's outside the team's control. It's tough to predict a guy's career being derailed by injuries, but having so few picks, you know, the Jets left themselves with minimum paths to successful draft. In fact, I think it comes down to, you know, Polite, the young man we just spoke about. And if he somehow fails to become a consistent double-digit sack guy, we probably won't remember this as a very successful draft class, in my opinion. I can say I won't remember this as a successful draft class. I'm sorry, listeners, and there are paths to get there, but it seems unlikely to me. Maybe, you know, Chuma Adoga, who you mentioned, you know, becoming a left tackle of the future, could salvage this class in event of Polite as a bust. But that's all I got. So New England also took a third-round edge rusher, Chase Winovich, who, as we all know, these types of players always strive in New England. And it just seems like the perfect pick for New England.
For the record, I did mock him there in the first round to New England, last pick of the first round.
Yeah, you did. And if he somehow busts, New England could still have a successful class of some combination. Listen, I think Jawan Williams, you know, Yotner Kajust, Damian Harris, or listen, this, I'm drawing such a bad thing on
But you see, there's I know people love this draft, and I'll go back. I'll touch on the Maccagnan situation you just mentioned before. But the one thing I will say is, it's not like Yanni Kajust came with no questions. We're talking about a guy that people thought was a first round pick at the start of this process, and as they evaluated his tape more, as they evaluated his combine numbers more, he fell all the way to the third round. So this is the reason I'm pointing this out. You know, Chase Winovich going after Ja'Kai Polite. I'm not even going to sit here and tell you I thought Chase Winovich was a second round talent. I actually think he's a better ball player. He might not be the better athlete, but he's a better ball player than Rashawn Gary, who went, I believe, at number 11 or 12. So what I'm saying, though, is if Mike Maccagnan is going to get crushed for taking guys that are first-round talents that fell out, then I don't understand why we're praising the New England draft. I mean, Damian Harris, yeah, he's in Alabama, he's a workhorse, but he doesn't do anything that they do in their scheme. That's Josh. That was Josh Jacobs, I believe, in the first round, he went to Oakland. He does everything they do. So I'm not crushing them, but I do hear people that say these things. As far as Maccagnan and not having draft capital, you got to understand some things. When he took over this team, it's not like he's been the only one that struggled. One, they had a coach that didn't develop talent. He just hasn't. I actually was listening to Connor Hughes earlier Sunday, and he was talking about how Nathan Shepard, third-round pick from last year, was the best defensive lineman in camp last year. And for some reason, I think I've mentioned this to you, for some reason, he just didn't get any burn over a guy like Henry Anderson. When you're a coach that doesn't prioritize developing draft picks, two things happen. One, your drafts look worse than what they should be. And two, you can't flip players for draft capital. When you think of the Jets, the Jets were barren under John Idzik and the last couple of years of, I mean, John Idzik was only here for 2 years. He oversaw two drafts. And before him, you have to think about Mike Tannenbaum, how bad he was doing. So in order to accumulate draft picks, you got to have players to trade. Unless you're trading out first round picks for multiple second and third round picks. And since the Jets haven't been making the playoffs, they haven't had picks in the 20s to 25, 30 range where they're willing to move that one pick and get multiple second and third round picks like these teams. So there's a lot that goes into it. And, there's a lot of analysts that don't want to see that part of it. You know, when you're talking about Cordy Glenn getting traded from Buffalo, that's a Pro Bowl left tackle getting traded. They got first round pick and change for that. You know, when you start really analyzing that, the Jets just haven't had the players to trade to accumulate these picks. And because they're not drafting in the back end, I mean, Darren Lee was there under Maccagnan. Darren Lee was their only pick outside of the top 15. Think about that. And Darren Lee, they whiffed on. And if you listen to everybody, that was Todd Bowles' pick. And I'll be honest with you, I believe it now, because who did Tampa Bay take? A middle linebacker, Devin White. So that's what he feels makes his defense click. Anyway, that's where that comes from, man. It really does. It's the problem. The other problem I have, and he trades a lot of day three picks. He does. He likes to wheel and deal on day three. I think one of his biggest problems in the draft is that he's not willing to wheel and deal on day one and two. And that's dealing on day one and two is how you accumulate most of your draft capital, where he does struggle. And I did say that. I thought he had knocked it out the park for day one and two, staying put. But that's just where it comes in, and he doesn't do it. So now, I don't know if you know what I mean, like if he deserves criticism.
Now, what's your thoughts on Blason Austin? Am I pronouncing his name right?
Yeah, Blason Austin. Lloyd, this is a kid that, and once again, in the sixth round, I thought that this was a money pick, and I'm going to tell you why. This kid is out of Rutgers. He's a hometown kid, New Jersey kid, Queens kid, actually. He's playing in New Jersey, so he's a hometown kid for the Jets. They can oversee, basically his rehab, right? But we're talking about a kid, as far as NFL.com specifies, this kid was a second round pick on talent. This kid is a second round pick when he's on the field. He was a riser, but he suffered two ACL injuries. If you're the Jets and you feel like, I mean, realistically, man, are you drafting starters in the sixth round? I mean, for the most part, you're not. Yeah, and I always hear it. Oh, the really good ones draft, starters. That's not true. If you look at, and I'll take Bill Belichick as an example, since, everyone praises his drafts, right? Bill Belichick drafts special teamers and on day three. That's his main focus, special team guys. And what he does is once he gets them in the door and he sees what he can build on and what they really aren't good at, he starts to develop football players. Rod Ninkovich comes to mind. He was a special teams ace for multiple years before, moving into the starting linebacker role for them. And that's what this kid is going to be. This kid is just Mike Maccagnan. He, to me, just did a great job, man. I mean, from Trayvon Westco, who most people don't realize has already shed 11 pounds from his 272 pound frame playing weight. He's going to be another one. You watch. Damian Woody was just praising him on Saturday.
I like absolutely loves it. You know what, Mad Mike? I like trying to find undervalued players late in the draft, and perhaps, you know, this young man is a talented player who's fallen due to injury and is ready to bounce back. But yeah, I still have a little bit of major concerns with him coming off of two serious knee injuries and missing two important developmental years. You know, I've seen a few analysts put out claims that he would have been a second-day pick if he had stayed healthy. But, you know, those can be dubious claims, and nobody can say for sure a successful season of play can skyrocket a player's value. And a disappointing season can absolutely cause a player to tumble several rounds. We have no idea how Austin's season would have played out, or, you know, what his stock would have been if he stayed healthy. And this is a case where the Jets think they know something nobody else does. And we'll find out whether or not they're right or not. But sometimes you got to take chances, right? And if this young man pans out to be what the Jets' expectations of him are, you know, they'll definitely hit a home run with this.
Well, I mean, we'll see. Like you said, he's lost 2 years of development. At the same time, he's got to show that he can stay healthy. But the Jets do believe they have a coaching staff in place that can develop him, that can get him up to speed as he rehabs. And sometimes that's all you need. Sometimes the time away. So there's two ways to develop, right? So there's some guys that can develop on the field through play. And then there's other guys that can develop off the field through tape and watching the actual speed and learning from the sideline, right? So we can say that this kid still has some work to do because he hasn't been on the field. But at the same time, maybe he is ready. Maybe all the video time, everything he's put in, all the observing he's done will bear fruit. We don't know. I'm not going to kill them for it. I think it was, first of all, it's a 6th-round pick. You know what I mean? We got to stop treating Mike Maccagnan like he's drafting, you know, in the first round, taking 6th-round talent in the first round. You know what I mean? We have to stop.
Yeah,
with
he's
this.
Definitely not Dave Gettleman. I'm sorry, I just had to.
You know what I mean? I'm just saying. You know what I mean? He gets a lot of criticism for it, and you know, I heard a lot of people. He took malcontents in the draft. Well, you want to know what, Lloyd? This year specifically, and last year, have showed me, one, he got an A from NFL.com 2 years in a row. He's got an A from Matt Miller and Bleacher Report 2 years in a row, which has to, things need to be said about that. You know what I mean? Now, the question is, does he have the coaching staff to develop guys? Now, he didn't take some guys. He has some miscues, in my opinion. Really, really, really did have some miscues, in my opinion. I thought that trading back. Trading down in the 4th round and passing on your boy, Chauncey Gardner-Jones, was a big-time mistake, I'll be very honest with you, because they needed a cornerback. And while he's not an outside corner, he's a modern-day big nickel corner, can play in the box, can line up at linebacker or safety in these exotic packages that these teams all have. So, I don't know, man, just in my opinion, that was a miss, and that was done because, like you spoke about, he had to, you know, get a little bit more draft capital. It's gonna hinge on Trayvon Wesco, who I really, really like at tight end, as an H-back. It's a position that they were hoping Todd Bowles could eventually develop, which he didn't develop as coach here, and they're gonna give Adam Gase another shot at it.
Yeah, listen. Overall, I mean, my thing is, again, you know, I don't want to come across like I'm bashing Maccagnan, because I'm not. You know, obviously, the more picks you have, obviously, the more you can do with your team. And so I would just like to see him, you know, capitalize on that. But, you know, I guess you do what you can with what you have.
Yeah, I mean, but once again, once he doesn't trade the third pick, what does he have? In order to move up to take a center like Egton Jenkins, he's got to trade both third-round picks. And if he trades both third-round picks, yeah, he's got himself a center.
Jets pick, I mean, they didn't have a second-round pick, did they?
No, they traded the second-round pick in the Sam Darnold trade, which has to, you have to make the trade. I don't hear anybody crushing Philadelphia for all the picks that they gave up to get Carson Wentz. I don't hear anybody talking about all the picks that the Buffalo Bills gave up to get Josh Allen. You know, when you really stop and think about it, it's It's just a matter of what are you willing to do. To get back into the second round at the top, they tried to get back into the second round. They weren't willing to part with next year's first round pick to get multiple picks on day two. And I'll be very honest with you, with the amount of guys that dropped to day two, I thought that that was a big mistake. I thought that you could target a team like Indianapolis. I thought you could target a team like Seattle and try to get a second round pick, an additional third round pick on day two this year for your first rounder next year. But I'm not going to begrudge them for not doing it. But yeah, I thought you can, you know what I mean? Like, and just to give you an idea of what I'm thinking, I was thinking you can snag a guy like Elgton Jenkins at center, and you can snag Greedy Williams at the top of the second round, first round talent. And all of a sudden, you got your center of the future, and you got your outside cornerback to go along with Tremaine Johnson. And yeah, you're not picking in the first round next year, but if you like the next this year, right? If you're getting first round talents in other rounds, then you're crushing it.
Yeah, no, you're right. And you know, I also want to bring up that Baker Mayfield, and I actually agree with him. You know, he spoke out of against analysts and told him like he's tired of hearing these guys kill, you know, moves that teams make. I mean, how many times have we seen a first rounder can't miss drafty do terrible in the NFL, Mad Mike? And not just the NFL, but just in sports in general. And how many times have we seen gems come out of the later rounds that end up being Hall of Fame players?
Listen, Lloyd, and I heard somebody say it on Thursday night, because they were hammering home the point that, and they're not wrong, Kyler Murray wasn't even the best quarterback in this class. He just said he wasn't. His size is going to be a problem, you know, like I know. You can compare him to Russell Wilson all you want. Russell Wilson is 220 pounds at his playing weight. It's 220 pounds. This kid is 185 pounds playing weight. Yeah, he's 207 pounds. Of eating tacos, but he's not going to play at 200 pounds. He's going to play at about 185 pounds. But they've made it very clear. It's not about being the best player sometimes. It's about being in the best situation to succeed. And Arizona with Cliff Kingsbury is the best situation for him to succeed. And that's why he goes number one overall. Nick Bosa going to San Francisco to play on the other side of D4, that's a perfect situation. Yeah, he's the number one player, on most people's boards, but it's also the perfect situation. If he came here as a Jet, and I'll give you an example, if he comes here as a Jet and he's got to anchor the line, the edge by himself with nobody, is he going to be as good as he will be in San Fran with a guy like Ford on the other side of him? Maybe not. But at the same time, I'm going to give you another example. Quinnen Williams. He might be in the best, and no one will agree with me. They might not, because the Jets are a laughing stock, Lloyd. He might be in the best situation to succeed. Why? Because you're talking about putting him on the other side of now Polite. You're going to have Polite, Leo on one side, and then him in the middle. You can't double team anybody on that side anymore. He's going to have free range. He's going to be able to beat single, defenders. And same as Leo, and same as so. When you start breaking it down, if fit does matter, man. And Baker's not wrong about that. Fit matters.
Yeah, well, with him not being wrong about that, I'm going to turn around and bash Dave Gettleman for whatever, man. Look.
For being Dave Gettleman.
Yes. Here's the thing, man, Mike. Before we take a break, I just want to touch on this before we take a break. You know, Dave Gettleman said that two teams would have picked Daniel Jones before he got to 17.
He's lying to you.
Right? He insists this, man, Mike. This is what he insists. Now, I know he's lying. He's full of it. He's done complete opposite of everything that he said he was going to do. He said he wasn't going to trade Odell Beckham Jr., man, Mike. Guess what? He traded Odell Beckham Jr. He said he was going to draft the best available player regardless to need. On a team, he did that.
For the record, the best available player was a need and did drop.
Correct. So he said that. He didn't draft Sam Darnold. And in my opinion, Mad Mike, and I'm sure you're going to agree with me, last year's quarterback class was much better than this year's quarterback class.
Yeah.
Okay? He didn't take Sam Darnold. He took Saquon Barkley. And me and you have gone back and forth on this, on whether or not the Giants should have took Darnold or should have took Barkley. But then, Mad Mike, guess what? He did the complete opposite in this year's draft. Where the best player on the board wasn't Daniel Jones, Mad Mike. It wasn't.
He made a mistake last year.
All right. And that's the whole thing. Before we get to that, Mad Mike, Josh Allen was the best player on the board, the edge rusher from Kentucky. All right. If that's the case, you're right. He didn't do right last year by taking Saquon Barkley. Because, listen,
I've told you this the whole time. When you make that decision last year, you're chasing your tail going forward. And you want to know what? You're probably not picking this high ever again. And that's why he made the move. And he showed you that he made a mistake last year by jumping the gun this year.
Look, the Giants had the 6th pick and 17th pick. And they traded and got the 30th pick in the first round. But they shockingly selected Daniel Jones.
Which is another mistake.
And listen, here's the thing, man, Mike. I can't bash this young man because he has nothing to do with it. And fans, let's not bash him. He has nothing to do with this. He's just a player that was picked. That's it.
He has stuff to do with this. The organization makes the decision, but let's not act like this guy wasn't pulling strings. David Cutcliffe wasn't pulling strings. Whichever Manning you want to say. I doubt it was Eli pulling, but let's not act like as a matter of fact, we did hear Peyton was giving him the stamp of approval. So let's not act like he wasn't part of a backdoor move himself. He was.
This is what Gettleman was quoted as, listeners. And he said, I can say this to you guys right now. When we got here on Thursday night, the question was posed, why didn't you wait until 17 to select Daniel Jones? And Gettleman said after the draft concluded on Saturday night, this is what he was quoted as saying. He's like, well, I know for a fact that there were two teams that would have taken him in front of us at 17. I know that for a fact. And then he also said, this is tough. It really is. It wasn't easy for me to pass up Josh Allen, he added, referring to the Kentucky linebacker who was selected by the Jaguars at number 7 immediately. And he was saying that for me, my background, that was very, very difficult, but I think much of Daniel Jones and his future as an NFL quarterback. All right, now, Allen, the Kentucky edge rusher, was selected 7th, like I said, immediately by the Jacksonville Jaguars. And the only other quarterback taken in the first round, after 6 was Ohio State's Dwayne Haskins, who was selected with the 15th pick by the Washington Redskins. And if the Giants drop the ball with this man, Mike, they're going to have to face this man 2 times a year for the next X amount of years that he's a quarterback in the NFL if he gets there.
Let's go to break because I got a lot to say on this and I got some stuff I want to pose to you, some thoughts. So let's go to break, and on the other side of the break, we'll go there because Dave Gettleman guaranteeing 2 other teams are going to take him. I'm going to give you an exact reason why that's bogus. That's a bogus claim on his part. And as far as his thoughts and being in love with the guy, I'm actually going to tell you something, just analyzing what he said. That's going to, I think you're going to blow a gasket after I say it.
All right, so you have it. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Before the break, we talk about Dave Gettleman and how he continues to lie to the fans, to the press, also the media, which is part of the press. And, we was talking about him saying that there was 2 teams that would have drafted Daniel Jones before the 17th pick. And those sources are, man, Mike, league sources told ESPN that Washington wouldn't have taken Jones if he was available. That was one of the teams. The Denver Broncos, who drafted Missouri's Drew Locke in the 2nd round, also wouldn't have taken Jones with their first round pick at number 10. And they were the other team. Okay, other teams that may have been in the quarterback market, depending on who was available, was Miami, right? Cincinnati, The Dolphins later traded for Josh Rosen, and the Bengals took NC State's Ryan Finley in the fourth round. Listen, the Giants think they got their future quarterback. You know, and eventually successor to Eli Manning, and the intention Thursday was always to take him with the first of their three first-round picks. That was their intention. Stop BSing us.
Well, first off, and this is why I'm going to tell you it's bogus. One, it was known league-wide that the Washington Redskins were discussing a trade with the New York Jets to move all the way up to three to get Dwayne Haskins. You know, they didn't want to wait on him. They wanted to get ahead of the rush. They eventually deemed the price too high, whether that was through them or the Jets, who knows, right? So then you have the idea that Cincinnati was a landing spot for a quarterback. But here's the thing. Everybody said that the only quarterback Cincinnati was interested in was Dwayne Haskins. And if you think about it, Zach Taylor is from Ohio. He's a hometown guy, Cincinnati. And then you take the Ohio State kid, so a hometown kid, you know, of sorts. He's not from there, but you know what I'm getting at, right? So they said they felt like that was the guy that they were going to take. So we've already ruled out the Redskins. We've already ruled out, you know, the Bengals, right? So neither of those two teams are players for him. And now we know for a fact that Denver wanted Locke. And here's how we know that they never wanted Daniel Jones. And I know what Gettleman's going to tell you. They traded back. That should tell you they wanted Daniel Jones. No. Actually, once you took Daniel Jones, there was no threat that Drew Locke was going to get drafted in the first round. So they knew their guy was Drew Locke. So they traded back to 20 and got the extra second round pick from the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's knowing how to read a draft board. Do you understand what I'm saying? Once Daniel Jones comes off the board, they know Drew Locke doesn't get drafted in the first round at all. There's no chance he's coming off. So instead of reaching at one, they trade back to 20, take Noah Fant, and they get their guy in the second round. That's how you draft everybody. And I can't believe I'm saying that about John Elway, because he's never learned how to see a draft board. So the three teams, I just gave you three teams, took them all out of the equation. So who do we have left? Miami? We know Miami is already on record as saying that they're going to tank for next year's class because they believe next year's class is a difference maker. And what did they do? They rolled the dice on a guy from last year's class who, like everybody said, this class was sandwiched in between two really good classes, great classes, and this was the down year. So last year was the up year. This is the down year. Next year is the up year. We know exactly what Miami was looking at. They were looking at next year, and now they're saying if we hit on a guy from last year's class, then we don't even have to, you know, reach next year. Now we're in even more. Like you were just saying, right? You just talking to everybody about how you accumulate talent. That's how you accumulate draft capital. Because next year they're not going to need to take a quarterback at the top, and they're going to get a king's ransom. Smarter than the Giants. So I just eliminated four teams for you. Four. Oh, Atlanta needs one? No. Carolina needs one? No. Detroit needs one? No. Buffalo needs one? No. Jacksonville just paid Nick Foles all that money. Do they need one? No. So we just eliminated everybody. Pittsburgh moved up for a quarterback? No. For a linebacker. So that's the whole board. So he can tell you whatever the hell he wants. He's a liar.
And that's my problem with him. Look, Jones threw for 2,674 yards with 22 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. As a junior last season, he rushed for 300-plus yards and 3 touchdowns. Man, Mike, he played at Duke. He played at Duke.
Yeah, and while I'm at it, and it has nothing to do, the Giants took him yet, but this is a lot of the issue I have, right? Everyone says, well, yeah, he played at Duke, so he didn't play with the same talent that Dwayne Haskins played at, right? Played with. Well, here's what I'll tell you. He played at Duke, so he didn't play against the same competition that Dwayne Haskins played against, right?
There you go, and that was the reason why I was stating he played at Duke. That's why.
So I'm just pointing that out. If you want to tell me, well, he didn't play with the same kind of talent, he didn't play against the same talent. So I'm telling you, if he would have played with better talent, he probably still would have been the same player because he would have been playing against better talent.
And I just want to quote something that just made me want to jump through the television and do a samurai drop kick into his chest.
I hope you, you're going to read exactly what I was going to tell you. I know what it's going to be.
Gettleman immediately fell in love with Jones Tate, and it was a Senior Bowl that the deal was sealed. And Gettleman was convinced after seeing Jones play. Three serious, listeners. Three damn seriouses in a Senior Bowl. He said he saw a professional and at that point, full-blown love. What?
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Because what you missed in that comment was not just the fact that he fell in love at the Senior Bowl. It was that he also admitted he didn't see him play live until the Senior Bowl. So you drafted a guy at 6 that you hadn't seen play live. Think about that. You just said he played at Duke, listeners. He played at Duke. Well, Dave Gettleman never saw him play at Duke, admittedly, unless he's lying to us again. But he said, I didn't see him live until the Senior Bowl.
Listen, Giant fans and many other fans or many other analysts, whoever you say, everybody was stunned. The fans booed. I was like, what the hell? My brother was going nuts. My brother-in-law was going nuts. My other friend, that's a Giants fan, was going bananas. People were saying they're done with this team. They're disowning this team. You know,
and just to Dexter Lawrence is just as bad a pick.
You want to know why? Before while we're on that subject, you want to know why it's a bad pick, Mad Mike? You want to know why? Because the Giants play a 3-4 defense, right, Mad Mike? They play a 3-4, and Dexter Lawrence plays the nose. They have two other damn dudes that play the nose, Mad Mike, that can't move outside and rush the pass in B.J. Hill and Dalvin Tomlinson. That's why that pick made absolutely no damn sense. None.
Not only that, Lloyd, but like Louis Riddick said, by the way, Louis Riddick, interviewed twice for the job, got passed up for the job. If you remember, one of the reasons he got passed up for the job is because he told the Mariners, he told ownership that he would move on from Eli Manning last year and draft a quarterback last year. It's the reason why he didn't get the job. Same Louis Riddick that said, you don't draft in today's game, you don't draft defensive tackles that don't sack the quarterback in the first round. He said that. You don't draft pocket pushers in the first round. Why? Because like you just said, you can find a B.J. Hill in the third round. That's why. Because you can find a big, fatty space eater the same way the Cowboys did, the same way the Chargers found one at 28, who can sack the quarterback inside of Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa. These are things that you don't mistake. Not only that, but remember something. Christian Wilkins got drafted ahead of him, and Clelin Ferrell got drafted ahead of him. So in the end of the day, you took who, the third best lineman on that Clemson team? Not only that, but he finished the last 2 years injured, and he got popped for PEDs. So that's the guy you took at 17, and like you said, he just negated one of your better defenders last year, B.J. Hill, right? One of your better draft picks over the last few years, B.J. Hill, is now what, a bench player? Because he didn't draft Dexter Lawrence to be a bench player at 17th overall. But here's the other reason that doesn't work for me. Because if I sat here and said to you, if you were going to trade back into the first round to get a player on their fifth year, you know, to have the fifth year option available, right? If I said to you, draft Josh Allen, and then at 17, you take, I don't know, whoever was there, an offensive lineman, right? Let's take
Cody Ford, Juwan Taylor, both them dudes was there at 17.
No, or Bradbury was there.
Yeah.
Who was considered actually one of the best draft picks of the first round at 18 to Minnesota. You don't know how Jalapio's coming back next year from a broken leg to be your center. You draft this kid Bradbury. He can be center or he could kick inside to guard. Either which way, you get yourself a center playing right next to Will Hernandez for the next 10 years, right? You get that at 18, and I'm giving you Josh Allen, maybe the best outside linebacker you the Giants would have seen, Mike, since LT.
Just to kind since of piggyback LT. Off that, think of this. You have Nate Solder, Will Hernandez, the young man you just named, and Kevin Zeitler as 4 of your 5 linemen.
Thank you. And then you just got to find yourself the right tackle, right? And like I said, then that yeah, boom, Bradbury at 17. You take Josh Allen at 6. We already fixed your pass rush. We fixed the offensive line is fixed, right? And then we throw in your boy Daniel Jones at 30. Yeah, well, the Giants don't get a cornerback.
He probably would have been in the fifth damn round, Matt Mike. And then you say you use a 6th-round pick on somebody you say that's not going to play in 3 damn years? What the hell are you going to do with Eli Manning? Listen, man. Can we just go over these draft grades for, you know, we ain't going to do every team, listeners. We'll just do the AFC East and the NFC East because this is where the Jets and Giants sit. I'm just sick of Dave Gettleman, man. And, you know, you have Tish and you have the Maras. And I don't like to think that they know football, man. I would like to think that, man, Mike, but maybe they almost cursed. But maybe they don't. Maybe they don't. Because this dude is ruining this organization. Dave Gettleman, I'm talking about. He is ruining this organization. Also, I want to point out, it didn't seem like Sherman was a happy camper.
No.
It didn't seem like he was a happy camper.
No, most certainly was not.
You know, and we just broke it down, listeners. It makes all the sense in the world. Why reach for a quarterback that would have been there in the later rounds? Why? We've gone over so many scenarios that would have solved the Giants' most pressing needs, especially if you're sticking with Eli Manning for another year. And then we went through the same conversation in next year's draft, Matt Mike, with Tua coming out of Alabama and a kid from Oregon coming out of Oregon, a quarterback from Oregon. And believe me, the Giants probably would have been in a position where they would have been a top 10 pick in next year's draft. Oh, they damn well going to be a top 10 pick in next year's draft coming up. Best believe that. After this year's draft, best believe it. But let's start off with the AFC East, Matt Mike, and the Buffalo Bills. Real quick, their draft picks was Houston defensive tackle Ed Oliver. At 9, they took Oklahoma Cody Ford. And their next pick, Florida Atlantic running back Devin Singletary, Mississippi State tight end Dawson Knox, linebacker from Florida, Vosan Joseph, Jaquan Johnson from North Carolina A&T, Darryl Johnson from Boston College, and tight end Tommy Sweeney. So day one, I give him an A. Day two, I give him an A-. Day three, a B+. Overall, I give them an A-. All right, Buffalo, I think, got nice value in the top 10. You know, I love the Ed Oliver and Cody Ford. You know I've been big on Cody Ford, man, Mike.
Yeah, no.
I've been big on him. I give Buffalo overall an A- with their draft choices.
I thought they did good. We'll see what Devin Singletary turns out to be coming out of Florida Atlantic. He's one of the higher rated runners in the class, but we're not talking about the strongest of running back classes. Dawson Knox seemed like we'll see what he can be with Josh Allen. Their strengths don't seem to suit each other, in my opinion. Not saying Dawson Knox is not talented. I just don't think that Dawson Knox is going to operate deep downfield, and that's Josh Allen's strength. Josh Allen is actually one of the worst. One of the worst 1 through 9 yard passers in the NFL. One of the most inaccurate. So we'll see. But like you said, man, when you have a lot of picks, you tend to you're allowed to either miss more or your draft haul seems a lot better because you got a lot more to pick through.
All right, so now let's move on to the Miami Dolphins. They took Clemson defensive tackle Christian Wilkins. They took Wisconsin offensive guard Michael Ditler. They took linebacker Van Ginnell from Ohio State, offensive tackle Isaiah Prince, Auburn fullback Chandler Cox, and Washington running back Miles Gaskin. And I'm going to give them an A- as well. You know, I think Wilkins is a quality person and an excellent player with versatility to play anywhere in the line. And a team never really replaced Ndamukong Suh. And Wilkins has the ability to be really disruptive inside. So I give them an A-, which in theory is a B+.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the entire AFC East did really well. I think we'll see how it turns out for them. But once again, I just praise Mike Maccagnan for doing exactly what I think they did. They got a lot of players that are going to be solid special teamers, and you laugh at me for it, but you know, if you can draft three or four you know, ace special teamers on day three, and then you get one or two Pro Bowlers in those first 2 days, you've hit it out of the park. And I honestly do. I think Dealer is going to be a solid lineman. I just made the comment about if you're getting, you know, these solid players out of Wisconsin and you know, Minnesota and places like there, it was a no-brainer for me. And Christian Wilkins, I think, is one of the best tackles in this class.
All right, so now let's move on to New England. And New England picked Arizona State and N'Keal Harry, which I think is going to be big for them, Mad Mike. You know, he's one of the wide receivers that, you know, people were saying might go sooner. They took Vanderbilt quarterback Juwan Williams, Michigan defensive end Chase Winovich, Alabama running back Damian Harris, West Virginia offensive tackle Yogni Kajus, Arkansas offensive guard Hajelt. I'm drawing bombs with this, but do you know the hell? Well, Matt Micah, correct me, as he's been doing all this entire show, listeners. Hajat Foothold, Auburn quarterback Jared Stidham, Maryland defensive end Byron Coward, Stanford punter Jake Bailey, and Mississippi cornerback Ken Webster. I'm going to give them an A. Mad Mike, overall, and like you said, I think that all of the teams in the AFC hit home runs in this draft. And when Rob Gronkowski had to move outside in the playoffs this past season, it was pretty clear that New England needed a reliable big receiver to you know, win downfield. And I think that the young man from Arizona State should meet that need quite well, Mad Mike. I give New England an A.
I love the N'Keal Harry pick. I really do, because you're talking about a guy that they say just his problem is he can't get downfield. Well, New England doesn't throw the ball downfield, really, unless they see the breakdown in coverage or so a blown coverage. They normally just stay short, and that's what N'Keal Harry does. N'Keal Harry wins or you know all the short routes, and he doesn't drop anything. He catches everything. This is gonna be it's gonna be a problem for the New York Jets. It's gonna be a problem for the Dolphins. It's gonna be a problem for the Buffalo Bills to find a way to defend this kid. I'm not going to say he's going to bust out the gate with 100 catch season simply because, you know, Bill Belichick is so tough on his rookies. But yeah, this kid has got 100 in this system. He's got 100 catch season written
all
over him.
I totally agree, man. For some reason, this system makes wide receivers look unbelievable. And if you have a wide receiver that's coming in, I mean, that's already unbelievable, boy.
Well, you know what it is, Lloyd, because this system is predicated on yak. It's not predicated on beating you downfield. So then what they understand is, hey, one catch for 8 yards, whether you caught the ball, you know, at the 8 yard mark and got tackled, or you caught it at the 5 yard mark, my guy didn't get sacked and you gained an extra 2 or 3 yards. It doesn't really matter how you got there. And they're a firm believer in that, and that's why their guys, you see their guys all the time, 10 catches, 88 yards, and a touchdown. And when you look at it over the course of a 16-game season, you got 100 catches, you get, you know, 1,100 yards, and you get 9-10 touchdowns. And all of a sudden, these guys are all Pro Bowlers.
Yeah, listen, without a doubt, 2nd and 4, 2nd and 5, or 3rd and 2, and 3rd and 3 is a lot better, you know, than 3rd and 8. And New England, they're the masters at doing that, man, Mike.
And we already touched on Chase. Chase Winovich is going to be a freaking beast in their system. They had a good draft. They had a good draft. It's amazing.
All right, so now the Jets, all right? We all know the Jets took, just to recap, the Jets took Alabama defensive tackle Quinnen Williams, which me and Mad Mike love, really love that pick. Florida offensive linebacker, Deshaun Light. They took USC offensive tackle Chuma Edoga, Virginia tight end Trayvon Wesco, Minnesota linebacker Blake Cashman, and Rutgers cornerback Bassan Austin. I'm going to give them an A- overall, Matt Mike. Williams was a dominant player at Alabama, and he'll be a thorn in the side of NFL offensive lines for a long time to come. And new defensive coordinator Greg Williams won an interior presence, whether he calls in for 3 or 4-man fronts, and Williams is all of that. The Jets fans, you know, may have been looking for outside pass rush in round one, but it's tough to fault them for taking Williams, man, Mike. A- for the New York Jets.
Yeah, and once again, like I said, if you can get Ja'Kai Polite in round 3 or, you know, I'm happy he fell to round three. It eliminates that whole Josh Allen need. I mean, there was only two players in all of college football last year, this past season, that had 10-plus sacks and 4-plus forced fumbles. And it was Kai Polite and Josh Allen. So if I said, hey, man, take the best player in the draft in Quinnen Williams, and not my words, you know, most pundits said he's the best player in the draft, number one on their big board. If I say take him at three, and Ja'Kai Polite will fall to you. He's probably, I think he was the third rated pass rusher in this draft. Third rated pass rusher in this draft, fell all the way to the third round. If you really have that kind of confidence in you, and that falls to you, yo, you got two top 10 players in one draft. All right. I'm fine with that.
All right, so now let's move on to the NFC East, which is with the Giants in. And let's start with the Dallas Cowboys as they took UCF defensive tackle Tristan Hill. Then they selected Penn State offensive guard Connor McGovern. They selected Memphis running back Tony Pollard. Miami quarterback Michael Jackson. Miami defensive end Joe Jackson. Texas A&M safety Donovan Wilson. Ohio State running back Mike Weber. And Oregon edge rusher Jalen Jelks. And I'm going to give Dallas, hey, look, Amari Cooper showed what he could become, you know, when teaming with Dak Prescott last year. Yes, Dallas gave up a first-round pick to get him. But let's remember, he's just 24 years old and not a veteran who will be in his 30s before too long. Look, if the team can't sign him to a long-term deal, then the grade gets adjusted downward. But I don't see that happening. So I'm giving Dallas an A, man, Mike.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job snagging Pollard. And actually getting Mike Weber late was just showing off. People don't realize how good Mike Weber was.
Yeah, Mike Weber's a hell. Listen, if you don't know who Mike Weber is, you need to look up his highlights. YouTube, utilize that YouTube app and look up his highlights.
Yeah, people don't realize how good. And then Connor McGovern was actually who the Jets were going to take if they took Connor McGovern to play center and guard. Talking about a guy who was a two-year starter at guard, a two-year starter at center, and then moved inside to guard this year for Penn State. And if anybody knows that, you know, that's what they need, because they don't know if Travis Frederick's going to come back healthy. If he does come back healthy, you just got a guard to replace Looney. And if he doesn't come back healthy, you just got, you know, a center for the next 8-9 years or whatever, 5 years, whatever you want to say it. It was a really, really good pick for them. Tristan Hill, I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't know much about him. Everybody seemed to be split depending on what network you were involved with. Some people loved it. Bleacher Report absolutely loved it. ESPN was split on him. NFL Network liked it. So I give him an A because I thought they got a lot of talent and they had the luxury of being able to do so. So,
all right. So now let's move on to the Philadelphia Eagles as they drafted Washington State offensive tackle Andre Dilliard. They took Penn State running back Miles Sanders, who to me, man, Mike, is almost an exact clone of Saquon Barkley. They took Stanford wide receiver J.J. Whiteside. They took Penn State defensive end Sharif Miller and Northwestern quarterback Clayton Thorson. I'm giving him an A. Look, Jason Peters had a great NFL career, but he is 37 years old, and his contract is due to expire after next season. And Dillard and Lane Johnson will form a great tandem whenever Peters moves on. And giving up late fourth round and sixth rounder to trade up to get Dillard was more than acceptable to get an elite pass protector. So I'm giving Philly an A, man, Mike. I love Miles Sanders, man. Love that young man.
I give them an A+. Andre Dillard was the best pass protector in this class. Maybe not the best pass. Maybe not the most complete offensive lineman, but he was the best pass protector in this class. To get him, especially when you have a 37-year-old left tackle Pro Bowler and an injury-prone young quarterback, absolute key. Miles Sanders, you said it. Miles Sanders is not Saquon Barkley for the simple fact that he doesn't break as many tackles as Saquon Barkley, but Penn State missed nothing when Saquon Barkley left. Nothing whatsoever. This kid can catch it. He can run it. He can, you know, first cut, read. He can do it all. And, I mean, listen, It's a J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. What can you say when you think about Zach Ertz, when you think of Dallas Goedert, those two running inside, and then you have you know, jump balls to Alshon and this guy? Are you kidding me? What cornerback is going to defend them in the red zone? Yeah. Nobody. Yeah. A+.
Listen, all right, so now the Washington Redskins, they drafted Ohio State quarterback Dwayne Haskins.
A++.
All right, they took Mississippi State offensive linebacker Montez Sweat. They took Ohio State wide receiver Terry McLaurin. They took Stanford running back Bryce Love. They took Indiana offensive guard Wes Martin. They took Alabama center Ross Pierce. Pierce Baker. Sorry. Thank you, Mad Mike. They took North Carolina linebacker Cole Holcomb. They took North Carolina State wide receiver Kelvin Harmon. They took James Madison quarterback Jimmy Moreland. Oklahoma edge rushing Jarjan Brelford. Like Mad Mike said, I'm going to give them an A. Well, not Mad Mike said it. You know, he was saying in the background that he loved some of the picks. I'm going to give them the A. The fact that they did not have to move up to get Haskins was a major bonus. In my opinion, Mad Mike, his arm is live, and he has the ability to distribute the football to all parts of the field, okay? All parts of the field. And given the murky future of Alex Smith, finding Haskins waiting for them at 15 could prove to be a franchise-changing move for this team. Finally, Washington traded up to grab Sweat, who will be a fine pass rusher if his heart condition does not prevent him from reaching his potential. They really
He doesn't have a heart condition. It came out just a couple hours before or after the draft started that he was misdiagnosed. How the league misdiagnoses him at the combine is beyond me, and why they wait for the day of the draft to admit that they misdiagnosed him is beyond me.
All right, and they really need a depth at outside linebacker where I think he fits in quite well as well. I'm generally not enamored with giving up future second-round picks, but God's talent's worthy, you know, is worth taking a chance. So I'm giving the Washington Redskins, I'm giving the Washington Redskins an A. And, Matt Mike, this is a team that the Giants are going to have to face twice a year, and everybody in the Giants division, just like everybody in the Jets division, hit a home run. But the difference is, before, as we move on to the Giants didn't. But what's your grade for the Washington Redskins, Matt Mike, before I move on to the Giants to give? I'm already telling you I'm giving them a damn F, but go ahead.
I gave them an A++. I think that I think Dwayne Haskins was the best quarterback in this draft. I think I've told you that already. I think that, like I said before, it's scheme fit is the only reason Kyler Murray was the number one pick. Outside of that, I don't think Kyler Murray gets drafted in the first round. I think Dwayne Haskins was the best quarterback in this class. Maybe a weak class, but still the best quarterback in this class. Montez Sweat was the third best pass rusher in this class, and how he falls all the way down the board, like I just mentioned to you, that's a steal for them. I'm going to say a dark horse in this is Ross Piersbacher, center out of Alabama. The guy is nothing special as an athlete. They say that his first step athleticism after the snap is what turned him into a fifth round center. You know, they said he's lacking in it, but Nick Saban has said that he thinks that is I don't want to say overrated. He thinks it's overblown because he thinks that if when you go turn on the tape, and something that Daniel Jeremiah did admit to, when you turn on the tape, he very rarely makes the wrong read. He's quick to make the right read, and then he sees he's able to pick up the next guy. He normally doesn't block the wrong guy, and it allows for holes to basically not or gaps not to close up on his running back. So, I'd like to see how that turns out. But if that's the case, you put him next to Brandon Scherff, and all of a sudden that line also looking really good.
All right, so now let's move on to the New York Giants. Notice how my voice is going down. The Giants selected Daniel Jones. From Duke, they selected Clemson defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence. They took Georgia cornerback DeAndre Baker. I've seen this young man play quite a bit, Matt Mike. I don't know if I would have traded that many picks to get him.
That's why I'm not buying in. I don't care what everybody tells me.
I mean, he's a solid football player. They took Old Dominion defensive end O'Shane Zimenez. They took Notre Dame cornerback Julian Love, Matt Mike. Who Tom McShay said out of all the picks, this was the best pick that the Giants made in the entire draft.
I thought the Jets were going to take him or Chauncey in the fourth round. They had the third pick. And I was like, you're either taking Julian Love or Gardner Johnson right here. I would have gone Gardner Johnson simply because he's from the SEC, but I'm not going to knock them. Home run pick for them. I really, really like Julian Love. Really, really like him.
All right, and then they took Wisconsin linebacker Ryan Connolly. They took Auburn wide receiver Darius Slayton, who I like as well, Mad Mike. I like Darius Slayton. They took I've never heard of Washburn before. Cornerback Corey Ballantyne. And let's just
got shot
yesterday, and a teammate of his was killed. Our condolences goes out to his teammates, family, friends, and loved ones. This is an unfortunate situation. Corey Ballantyne was shot. Apparently, he should be okay from his gunshot wound and be able, be okay and be able to resume football responsibilities. They took Kentucky offensive tackle Jorge Asafo Ajayi. And they took Syracuse defensive tackle Chris Slayton. Mad Mike, we come up with our very own grade for the worst of the worst. And because I like the Julian Love and DeAndre Baker and Darius Slayton picks, I'm still giving them an F. As we mentioned, Jones, he's not a sensible replacement for Eli Manning. A sensible replacement was Haskins Jr. The quarterback, look, he possesses a lot of positive traits, I guess, if you want to say that. We thought it might have been time for the Giants to find a successor to Manning, which we thought it was time for him to find it last year. We thought it was time for them to find it this year, which they dropped the ball with that. And I somehow feel, Mad Mike, that this team is going to end up picking a quarterback, another quarterback in another year or so. You know what I'm saying? And look, they received extra first-rounder in a trade of Odell Beckham Jr. to the Browns. And they selected Lawrence, massive defensive tackle who, like Mad Mike said, doesn't sack the quarterback. And if he shows the ability to push the pocket as well as provide a wall inside, maybe he'll be a success. But Dave Gettleman moved back around one to pick Baker, the top prospect at the position of need. Giving up two Saturday picks, I don't know, man.
Here's why I said the ability to read the board, right? How many cornerbacks got drafted in the first round? One, DeAndre Baker. And the Giants, I believe, had the 35th pick, Lord. What did they have? They gave the 34th to 35th pick in the draft, right? Something like that, maybe 37th. Anyway,
37th.
Yeah, their ability to read the draft board is laughable because in the end of the day, you don't use the 4th and 5th pick to move up back into day one when this guy is not going to get drafted. New England was not looking for a cornerback, and I believe you traded with Seattle. Who was it? Seattle? The Rams?
Seattle.
Seattle, right? They weren't looking for a cornerback that early in that round. As you saw, they took the cornerback in the second round. So that's the problem I have with them, that he completely misread the board. I guess what people say is true, right? When you really like somebody, you make sure you get them. Yeah, I hear you. But when that guy's comparable, Greedy Williams went at 46. Greedy Williams was on a lot of boards, was the number one cornerback in this class. So when you stop and think about it, I don't know, man. I didn't like the draft for them. I did like Zeminis in the third round as a pass rusher. He was actually a top 5 rated pass rusher in college football this year. But at the same time, for me personally, what does Dexter Lawrence matter? What does pushing the pocket matter when you don't have outside linebackers? I mean, this is one of the worst sacking defenses in the NFL last year. I think they were ranked 30th. And they had Josh Allen there, and they did it. I'm sorry. I just can't forgive. I can't forgive what they did. I just can't. At that point in time, if I'm not going to get all I'm saying is if I'm going to reach for Daniel Jones at 6, I'm drafting Montez Sweat at 17. You know what I'm saying? That's just all there is to it. I can't come out of this draft without the pass rusher, without an elite pass rusher at that. I just can't do it.
Man, Mike, and help me out with this because I'm going to forget somebody's name. But when you make an overall assessment of this Odell Beckham Jr. trade, right? So in theory, you traded Odell Beckham Jr. away. And for Odell Beckham Jr., you got Jabril Peppers. You got Dexter Lawrence. And I forgot what the other draft choice was. It another draft choice or another
player? Yeah, 95, which was Zemenis, the outside linebacker. So you got those three players for Odell Beckham Jr. Now, here's why, and I know nothing. You agree with me? Nothing's done in a vacuum, right? Why do you get Jabril Peppers in the Odell trade? You get Jabril Peppers because you let Landon Collins walk for nothing. So you got nothing for Collins. So you're aiming to get a safety back. You probably could have got some better stuff back, but you need the safety. So you get the safety back in that trade. You get the first and the third round. Why do you have to get that third round pick? Why is the third round pick so big? Because you used your third round pick on Sam Beal last year, who, by the way, was hurt in camp. Didn't play one snap.
No
so,
way and on God green's earth, man, Mike, would I make that trade.
But Steve, now here's my point, and this is why I say you got to be able to read it. One thing that the general manager also has to do, he's got to be able to see following year drafts, right? So look at all those cornerbacks that fell this year to the second round. You all these players that you could have had your hands on, but you didn't have a third round pick because you drafted Sam Beal in a supplemental draft last year. So now all of a sudden you got to move Odell Beckham to recoup other bad decisions you made.
And remember, Mad Mike, I was saying that in order for me to feel okay about the Odell Beckham Jr. trade was that the Giants had to hit a home run in the draft. And they didn't hit a home run in the draft. So now I don't feel okay about the trade. I don't. I don't feel okay about this trade because this team in the NFC East, where everybody in the NFC East got better, everyone got better except them.
And then, you know, it's funny, right? Because now look at Cleveland. Cleveland gets Odell Beckham, and then they attach something I said I would have done myself if I'm Mike Maccagnan, but they attach a draft pick next year to a third rounder this year to get Greedy Williams, who they deem as a first round talent and the best cornerback in this draft. So what John Dorsey is saying is, I'm opening my window. And while other he's not concerned anymore. And yeah, you know, not for nothing, if you think about it, John Dorsey took over a situation that not many GMs are ever going to come into. He took over a situation where he had 10 picks in the first three rounds last year. So what did he started willing and dealing, he started taking players, and now he had the ability to do what he did this year. But next year, he's not going to have any draft picks. The year after, he's not going to have as many draft picks. But what'd he do? He's already built the roster. He's already taken the chances on the guys he's had to take a chance with. And then he got a guy like Mac Wilson in the fifth round, who Nick Saban said, and shout out to Nick Saban, by the way, who really, really, really read the draft well. Mac Wilson will be a second round pick next year. But this year, he's a day three pick. They got themselves a second round pick next year and a fifth round this year. Why? Because they're not going to have the draft capital next year. That's how you win drafts. That's how you stay competitive for years to come. Doing that. Dave Gettleman really, really, really misread the draft.
And listeners, this is pretty much going to put a closure on football talks with us for a while, unless something major happens in football. Obviously, probably the next time we'll pick up football is when they have mini camps, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. But we still have a lot of sports to talk about. We still got NBA playoffs. We got baseball. We got hockey. And before we go to Mad Mike's rant, you know, sticking on the topic of hockey, you know, the Islanders are down 2-0 to the Carolina Panthers. And the most recent game, which was played yesterday, the Islanders' third period nightmare, it puts them in a hole. And the smallest things could be undoing. You know, like it was a one-minute collapse with this team. And that's what cost the Islanders, and now it has them leaving New York in a rather precarious situation. And by allowing two goals in 65 seconds, Matt Mike, at the start of the third period, the Islanders lost to the Hurricanes 2-1 in Game 2 of the second-round playoff series Sunday afternoon at the Barclays Center. Now the team heads to Raleigh, North Carolina for Game 3 on Wednesday night, with Carolina holding a 2-0 lead in a best-of-seven series. And the contest started as most expecting in game one here on Friday night, which went in overtime, tied at zero. The Islanders came out flat in that game, which I was expecting to lose. This game should have been 0-0. They should have lost that game like 3-0. You know, Jordan Staal scored, you know, with 4-4 into the overtime period to give Carolina the first victory. And both teams are predicated on playing good defense, and that shows, Mad Mike. But the Hurricanes suffered two big injuries in the opening 40 minutes of game two, losing defenseman Trevor Van Riemsdyk and on a left shoulder injury. And then they lost their goalie, Peter Mrazek, with 6:27 left in the second period. And his backup, listen, his backup came in, and the Islanders were hoping to expand on their lead, and they couldn't. And this is the Achilles heel for this team, man, Mike. As we said, they don't have a goal scorer. They don't have a goal scorer. And when you don't have a goal scorer, these are the types of games you lose. Games 1-0 in overtime, 2-1. But the Islanders had so many chances yesterday to put the puck in the net, man, Mike, and they just simply didn't. And I think this long layoff has hurt this team. It's hurt this team. They had a couple days off. You would think you would come back being, you know, rejuvenated and have lots of energy. And this team has been flat in the first two games, man, Mike. And their backs are against the wall. And it's not to say that they can't come back from two games. They only down two games to zip. So they have to win game three, man, Mike. They have to. If they don't win game three, listeners, they're not winning this series. They're not winning this series. Game three is a must for the New York Islanders. A must. And what was the difference between them playing Pittsburgh and them playing Carolina? Obviously, energy, which I said they didn't come out energy. They've come out flat. But look how many goals they scored against Pittsburgh, man, Mike. They wasn't beating Pittsburgh. They wasn't scoring two goals. They were scoring goals against Pittsburgh. And also things playing in the Barclays Center, Mad Mike, also doesn't help. Completely different atmosphere, listeners. I've been in both stadiums or arenas. I've been in the Coliseum. I've seen the Islanders play at the Coliseum, and I've seen them play at the Barclays Center. I don't give a damn what anybody says. World of difference.
No, it's not the same. And that's the one, like I said.
And people say convenience, Mad Mike? Nonsense. Nonsense. Oh, you know, diehard, all of them. Oh, I'd rather go to the Barclays Center because it's convenient for me. Makes a world of difference. There's nothing like the Coliseum for this hockey team. And it's also a mental thing for them, Mad Mike, having to play at the Barclays. A lot of players don't even like to play at the Barclays Center. A lot of the players don't even like it there. So why not just have the entire... What, you know what I'm saying? This is like a money thing, man, Mike. Obviously, the Islanders, they're going to make more money playing at the Barclays because it's a big arena, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. You get a bunch of people that don't know a damn about hockey, that it's convenient for them to go there because they live in Brooklyn and the arena's in Brooklyn and they just go there to watch a damn hockey game. If you watch the Islanders play, look at the difference between a fan participation at the Coliseum and at the Barclays Center. I'm not making any excuses for this team, Mad Mike. But all of this adds up. All of it adds up. And that plays a role in why this team is playing the way that they're playing and coming out flat against the Carolina Hurricanes. Because by far, the Washington Capitals are a better team than the Carolina Hurricanes. By far. And that's the team that I didn't want to face in this round. And I said, yes, we got the Carolina Hurricanes. And they're beating the snot out of it. Not beating the snot, but they're outplaying the Islanders thus far, Matt. Mike, your thoughts before we go into your rant.
I just think they lost the momentum. I think Pittsburgh being a division rival kind of helps you get up. You know the team. You've scouted the team a lot more. And that's not to say that Carolina is not a good enough team to beat them. But the other part of this equation that I think is getting overlooked, I think that part of them wanted it to be Washington. You know what I mean? I think that there was a letdown with them that they're not playing the Washington Capitals because that, you know, the Barry Trotz, the whole atmosphere of it, the defending champions, the coach versus old team, all of that. I just think all of it came into play in a perfect storm for them. And I hope that they do get their mojo back, man, because I hope they get the edge back, because the way that this whole field has played out for them, you know, I think that I don't remember a time in my time on this earth where their window has been so open. Like the opportunity to actually make the Stanley Cup isn't necessarily a dream. It can actually be a reality, in my opinion. The other thing I do want to mention to you is, how great was it to see John Tavares out in the first round and the Islanders still playing?
Yeah. I mean, that's been a bright spot, but I don't know, man. We'll see. Hopefully, in next week's show, we'll be saying something different, and we won't be saying that these guys are eliminated. So we'll see. But now it's that time of the show that we all love, listeners. It's time to let Mad Mike do his thing and give his rant for the week. Mad Mike, what's your rant for the week, brother?
My rant for the week, I gotta call out Masahiro Tanaka, bro. You had the opportunity up 5-0 to sweep the Anaheim Angels in a 4-game set on Thursday, and you lay an egg the way you did. You're supposed to be this ace of the staff. You know what I mean? Like, and you come out and you give up 6 runs in 5 innings against this horrible team that's been shut down by everybody. What the hell are you doing? And I don't want to hear nothing about my splitter is not working, because isn't that what Sonny Gray has been saying about the Yankees? Well, they're not throwing fastballs. Everybody wants, you know, us to be like Masahiro Tanaka. Well, if the Yankees are building a pitching strategy based on Masahiro Tanaka, then Masahiro Tanaka needs to show up every day and show us how it's done. When Sonny Gray has a 2.79 ERA in the NL in a band box in Cincinnati, and Masahiro Tanaka has given up 13 runs in his last 15 innings, I have a real problem with that. I'm tired of this guy not living up to his $23 million. I'm not going to say not living up to it, because you're going to be like, well, Matt Mike, the guy's got a 3.5 ERA. The guy has probably been the most consistent or the best starter on the staff this year. Well, you want to know what, Lloyd? Masahiro Tanaka, I'm tired of saying, hey, is this going to be the day where he's bad again? Is this the day where he's bad again? Like you said, aces, they'll give you 10 straight starts where you got nothing to worry about. He's not that guy. He'll give you 2 duds and 2 good ones. 2 duds and 2 good ones. I'm tired of seeing it, man. We can't keep losing to teams like freaking Kansas City and Anaheim. And you're going to be like, man, Mike, well, they're 11-2 in their last 13 games. You're right. But Lloyd, the 2 games they lost, did they get the starting pitching that they needed? No, neither. Both times, they didn't show up. I'm tired of this. This guy's supposed to be better than this. He's supposed to be better than this, Lloyd.
All right, there you have it. Listen, I mean, look, man, Mike, he also opted in, right? So you didn't think he was going to walk away from that kind of money. And you know, after he hurt himself, he hasn't been the same player since he's hurt himself. And like you said, you hit the nail on the head with describing him.
Lloyd, come on. We're talking about a guy who walked four Angels. You're walking guys in that route, in that lineup. You're scared to pitch outside to those of Mike guys?
Trout. Outside of Mike Trout and Albert Pujols is obviously on a decline. I didn't know one other damn player. Maybe Calhoun. I knew Calhoun.
Come on, Lloyd. 90 pitches and 25 hitters through 5 innings? Yeah. Come on, man.
He's more missed than he's been hit.
I'm over it already. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it.
Listen, maybe at some point we have to get Mr. Joe Rivera on this show to see what the hell is going on. But, you know, not for nothing, they're playing solid baseball. They really are. But, you know, with that being said, listeners, that's going to bring us to a close on this week's show. Like I said, we have so much more to talk about when it comes to sports. We still got NBA playoffs, which we haven't talked about. We have baseball, which we really haven't really touched up on as much as we normally do. You know, we still got hockey. Hopefully we'll have to, you know, continue to talk about hockey moving forward. But, you know, we want to thank you for continuing to stick with us, listeners. And we want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for keeping this thing going. I want to thank my co-host, Mike, Mad Mike, for, you know, rocking out with me, man. You know, I really appreciate it. This is something that we've discussed doing a long time ago. And I can tell you this much, listeners, me and Mad Mike, we would be in the gym bench pressing, going back and forth. That was the whole thing, you know. And we have a friend by the name of Oz who was like, yo, man, y'all should make, you know, put the team together and make the dream team. And that's exactly what we done. So I'm enjoying the ride thus far with you, Mad Mike, because we're closing in on our 100th episode. We're closing in on number 100, listeners. So we're going to try to put something special together for you guys for our 100th episode. So, and we want to thank you for sticking with us. So, listeners, please have a safe and blessed week. And me and the Mad Mike will see you in 7 days. So, hey, yo, let's roll, baby.
And just like that, that brings our show to a close. All of you fine, fine ladies and gentlemen that have been listening, I thank you. If you subscribe, thank you. If not, please do so. And make sure you share it with your friends and your family, anybody that you know. Or get into some sports talk. You got the best sports podcast, in my very humble opinion. The best sports podcast, the real sports and the real talk, right here with the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show. As you already know, episodes drop every single Monday. Head over to LloydAThompson.com. Follow on Instagram and Twitter at Lloyd A. Thompson. That's with two L's. Make sure you throw the second L in. And we'll catch y'all in a week. Peace.